From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 7th day of April, 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. And Harry Cooney of GrowMark will join us to take up the agricultural energy markets. In Ag News, the Secretary of Ag says he'll lead a delegation to the G8 meeting later this month. The Group of Eight expects to take up global food insecurity issues. Legislation has been introduced in the Senate to help build pipelines to carry ethanol from the Midwest to the East Coast. And there are new rules on how animal feed can be processed. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau and a very short update of the first crop progress report released by USDA yesterday. And don't forget, in 26 minutes, meteorologist Don Day will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. So stay with us for this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled in Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon. Futures like this in the wheat pit. Nearby contract at 5.39¾, the settlement price 17¼ lower for the May. July at 5.51¾, down 17¼. In September, wheat at 5.77½, down 16¾. December futures $5.99, a settlement price down 17¾. May corn futures 3.96¼, down 9¼. July at 4.06½, 9¼ lower. September at 416, down 8¾, and December corn at 427½, 9¼ cents lower. The March futures down 9 cents at $4.39. May soybean futures 4½ lower at $9.89½. July at 9.88, down 5½ cents. The August 6 cents lower at 9.65. September soybeans $9.31 a bushel, down 6 cents, and November contracted 908½, down 3½ for the afternoon. January 2010 beans down 6 at 915½. May bean meal futures 306.20, down 20. July at 302.20, down 90. May bean oil 15 lower at 34.84. July at 35.12, down 14. April live cattle at 86.27½, down 25. June at 83.75, 62½ lower. April feeders 27½ higher at 96.22½. And April lean hog futures 55 cents lower at 59.17½. From the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. May crude oil futures settled down $1.90 at $49.15 a barrel. June futures there at $51.91, down $1.47. May ethanol, $1.57, 2 cents lower. June contract at $1.58 2/10, down 3 6/10. Natural gas at $3.56 3/10, currently trading down 16 9/10. The RBOB gasoline at $1.46, 1½ cents lower. May heating oil, 3 cents lower at $1.38 8/10. And the propane futures at $65 1/10, down just about 0.8 cents. Gold futures now at $882.20 an ounce, up $10.70. The May 1050 higher at 882.50. Dow Jones Industrial Average at 77.84, down 191 points at the hour, and the U.S. dollar at 85.29, just about 57 points higher for the afternoon. The CRB index at 223 is down 1.45 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. A freeze watch is in effect for southern Illinois, along south of I-70, and for all of central and southern Indiana for this evening through tomorrow morning. Tonight, mostly clear skies, widespread frost. Lows will range from 27 in the north and the south. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and warmer. Highs will range from 50 in the north to 66 in the south.
Good day, sunshine.
Rain or shine. Shorts or snowsuit.
It's Illinois. Weather happens. You depend on us to keep you informed. We depend on you for financial support to make that possible. Give to our member match fund today, and we'll use your dollars on April 15th to challenge others to help make great programs possible on WILL. Go to willpledge.org or call 217-244-9455.
Good day, sunshine.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Time to check in on the agricultural futures markets. On the line with us, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the marketplace today. A little downturn there.
Yeah, you know, Todd, we thought we'd see, and we did start a little higher in the wheat after the frosts that we suffered over the evening time period here, and the temperatures dropping in some of the wheat areas. But a lot of people thought that some of this was already in the market, and also that it'd take us a couple weeks to see how much problems we really will be developing here that way. So we turned away from that after a little bit of trade, and then we looked at the dollar and the strength because of the GDP dropping over in Europe overnight. And the way that reacted with the Dow Jones being down 150, 200 points, and then the crude oil being down close to $2 today, all tended to pull the grain markets down before the day was over.
In the broad scheme of things, does it mean anything new, for instance, for the wheat market?
Well, the wheat market, I think it was a little bit disturbing that, you know, we moved on up on the news of the actual frost that happened last night, but to back off and close on the lows of the day is not good technically, Todd, after shooting on up there. But I think that, you know, we're going to take a look and keep watching the wheat as it does develop here along the way. But I guess the one thing we were probably shocked the most at was how corn backed off after the, you know, the 6-10-day forecast continues to call for above normal moisture and below normal temperatures, basically, in most of the areas south of I-80. So I guess that was what one surprised me more than anything.
Anything beyond the outside markets pushing the corn market lower?
You know, not that I have caught in the news articles today or saw any place like that. I mean, of course, we have great stocks of old corn. But, you know, in the last report showed us planting pretty decent acreage of it and everything that way. But we all know that as corn gets delayed planting, why sometimes it's easier to switch a few acres of beans in the marginal ground.
So a lack of buying pressure. Commercials, I assume, were not in the market very heavily today. Are they just bought up for their needs at this point?
I think that, you know, we've done the last little blip up that the commercials have pretty well, you know, covered their immediate needs. And I think that basically the slowdown in some of the ethanol plants is, you know, relieving some of the pressure as far as what needs to move right away also, Todd.
What else are we taking a look at in your mind for the commodity markets?
Well, I think, you know, there's another thing that everybody has to think a lot about is I think we probably won't see it's Passover and Good Friday this week, Thursday and Friday. So we're going to see a little bit of absence on the trading floor for the end of the week and being closed on Friday. So basically, tomorrow is the last day of full participation of all the traders on the floor, I imagine.
The markets will be closed on Good Friday in Chicago, but there is a full day of trade on Thursday yet, though you're suspect that many traders will be headed out on that day. And so it'll be light trading. That usually means that some big moves can take place. Do you think that'll be what happens?
You know, we never know for sure, and that's why they say big moves can happen on thin trading days. So, you know, along with the electronic trade has changed that a little bit, but we do look for a lot of people to not be in attendance on Thursday up in the trading floor, Todd.
Anything else to add before I let you go?
I think that's about it. We hope that it's warmer and drier wherever you're at.
All right. Thanks much.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Happens on Tuesday afternoons.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Hey, if you visited our website recently, willag.org, that's willag.org. There you'll find our daily ag programming. You can listen to it anytime you'd like as an MP3 file right off the website, or if you prefer to have it delivered to your iTunes account or other places automatically as a podcast, you can sign up to have that done as well. It's all at willag.org. And if you can't hear us on the air or listen to us on the web, why not try this number, 217-333-3434. It's our mobile analyst portal. It's a telephone line, 217-333-3434. We update it with the opening and closing market reports at 10:15 and 3:15 daily. Dave Dickey's here now with the Ag News for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack said yesterday he will lead the U.S. delegation that will participate in the Group of Eight Agricultural Ministerial Meeting in Italy later this month. USDA says the meeting will talk about ways to improve global food security. The UN's Food and Agriculture Organization estimates that 963 million people worldwide were undernourished last year, up from 923 million in 2007. The G8 includes agricultural leaders from the U.S., Canada, Japan, Germany, the United Kingdom, France, Italy, and Russia. Three senators have introduced legislation that would authorize a $5 billion loan guarantee for programs that would help finance construction of pipelines to carry ethanol from Midwestern producing sites to major consuming states on the East Coast. The bill was co-sponsored by Senators Tom Harkin of Iowa, Tim Johnson of South Dakota, and John Thune of South Dakota. Its main tools are loan guarantees for 90% of the cost of the project and eminent domain authority consistent with that available for natural gas pipelines. Each project would require a specific plan, including a route description, cost estimate, environmental review, and business plan to be approved by the Secretary of Energy. New rules intended to provide an additional safeguard against the spread of mad cow disease are scheduled to go into effect in 3 weeks, and the nation's cattle producers are continuing their campaign to get the Food and Drug Administration to reconsider both the regulation and its effective date. The so-called enhanced feed ban would prohibit certain cattle-derived risk materials from all animal feed and not just feed intended for cattle. The problem is that in the past, renderers who picked up dead cattle were able to process the bodies and sell the resulting protein to manufacturers who produce feed for non-ruminant animals. Requiring them to first separate the high-risk material before rendering greatly increases their costs. And New Zealand's new ambassador to the World Trade Organization, David Walker, is likely to be appointed chairman of the WTO's agriculture negotiations. Walker would have the advantage of close contact with his predecessor, Crawford Faulkner. Trade diplomats say Walker is now effectively the only name on the table. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL. It's Public Radio for the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. USDA yesterday released its first crop progress report. Highlights show that much of the country experienced temperatures the previous week that were cooler than normal, with average recordings as many as 12 degrees Fahrenheit below the average in, for instance, Wyoming. Extreme minimum temperatures fell into the single digits across areas in the northern Rocky Mountains and Great Plains. In contrast, locations in South Texas pushed the mercury near the century mark with recorded temperatures as high as 99 degrees. Precip dotted the United States during the past week, too, with substantial accumulations throughout the Pacific Northwest, Rocky Mountains, northern Great Plains, Corn Belt, the North Atlantic coast, and the Southeast. And for the second straight week, locations in Alabama, Florida, and Georgia received upwards of 4 inches of rainfall. That limited field work to 1 to 2 days and improved drought conditions throughout the area. Winter wheat conditions now. Nationwide, 43% of the 2009 crop was rated in good to excellent condition. That's down slightly from a year ago and the week ending November the 23rd of last year, 2008. That's also the last available rating before they stopped taking ratings over the winter time. In Kansas, 5% of the wheat crop shows signs of severe freeze damage, while 10% show moderate to severe wind damage. Heading was evident in fields in Texas and Arkansas. From the Midwest, not much to report, with the exception of from Iowa, where they collect a little extra data on fertilizer application. Last year, 55% of the fertilizer had been applied in Iowa. This year, 47%. That includes nitrogen applications. That's a look at some of the numbers from the National Agricultural Statistics Service's Crop Progress Reports. They're released on Monday. You can hear them, if you'd like, on our website each and every week, starting next week. In today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochka says estate tax laws must be changed if young and beginning farmers are to have a chance at getting started.
Individuals, family partnerships, or family corporations own 90% of our nation's 2 million farms. These family-operated businesses produce about 86% of the United States agricultural products. Estate taxes threaten family-owned farms and the livelihood of families who make their living in production agriculture. Estate taxes come due when the value of a farm exceeds the estate tax exemption. For example, in 2009, the exemption is $3.5 million, and the top tax rate is 45%. But estate tax laws are scheduled to change, and without congressional action, the exemption will shrink to $1 million in 2011, with a top rate of 55%. For 2010, a one-year repeal of estate taxes is scheduled, but a partial loss of step-up in basis will negate some of the benefits of the temporary repeal. The value of a farm operation that is big enough to support a family can easily exceed the estate tax exemption and trigger estate taxes. With farm estates facing heavier and potentially more disruptive tax burdens than other estates, twice the number of farm estates paid federal estate taxes in the late 1990s compared to other estates. In fact, it takes 2.5 years of farm income returns for a moderate-sized farm operation to pay off the estate tax owed. While estate planning can sometimes provide a way for surviving family members to continue farming, planning tools are costly and take away funds that are needed by farmers to operate and expand their businesses. In addition, changing estate tax laws make it more difficult to effectively plan for the transition of farms from one generation to the next. 80% of farm assets are land-based. When estate taxes exceed cash and other liquid assets on hand, surviving family members can be forced to sell land, buildings, or equipment needed to keep their businesses operating. Rural communities and the businesses they support also suffer when farms downsize or disappear. Farmland close to urban centers often is lost forever to development when estate taxes force farm families to sell off land to pay taxes. Farm Bureau believes that estate taxes should be eliminated and Congress should enact legislation to provide significant estate tax relief, which does not sunset. The exemption should be increased to $10 million per person, indexed for inflation, and transferable to a spouse. This is Amy Rochkis with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkis' comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just give us a call. The number is 217-333-0850.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Hey, just a quick reminder, the markets will be closed on Friday, so ag programming here will be a rerun, actually a pre-run, I suppose, on this program of our Commodity Week program. And our guest, you're going to like this, most of you are familiar with him and wait for him each and every spring. John Bondurant out of Memphis from Bondurant Futures will join us. We'll record with him Friday, or rather Thursday afternoon, post it to our website at willag.org that night, and you can hear it in this slot during the closing market report on Friday or in the regular slots over the weekend if you'd like. That's our Commodity Week program. John Bondurant is our guest this week.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Time to check our weekly check, that is, of agricultural energy markets. On the line with us is Harry Cooney of GrowMark. Good afternoon to you, Harry.
Good afternoon, Todd. Hey, 2 weeks in a row, huh?
Yeah, 2 weeks in a row. What did you tell me about the seasonals last week?
Well, seasonal tendencies continue higher out into the springtime. However, it looks like we've taken a little pause in our uptrend here, and we did not make a new high this week in the move. And, in fact, crude oil today went back and closed just barely under $50, down around $49.
What does that tell you technically about this marketplace?
Well, we were just down here at about $48 a week ago, and then we rallied up to $52. So we're kind of just in a sideways trading range here. When you look at the range, the highs and lows in crude oil on the price charts that you mentioned there in the month of March, they were a higher high and a higher low from the month of February. So we have gone into an uptrend. It's just now the boat's kind of lost its gas or so here, and we're just kind of floating here sideways. And we're going to go down to here probably in the next couple of days and retest that $48 level and see if it holds. If that does not hold, we may have to probe down to around $45 or so before that spring upward seasonal gets back underway. And of course, a lot of it will hinge on the action of the dollar and of the action in the stock market. Now, as we speak here, the Dow is back down about 160. It's not doing any major chart damage here, but we'll have to watch the action there very close here over the next couple of weeks.
I take it that your preference and your thought also there remains that the seasonal will actually kick in.
That's right. There's no indication yet that the seasonal has run its course to the upside. It's just that we've hit a little blip here where the stock market is set back, and the dollar has rallied at the same time also. And it seems like when the dollar tends to rally, that we see setbacks in the oil markets as well as a number of commodities in general. So we'll be watching the action of the dollar and the stock markets here. But I do think that we can come back to life here in the next couple of weeks in the energy complex, back to the upside here for the seasonal run.
Now, speaking of action, did you make note that three senators, we heard this earlier in the program during the news, had proposed in the Senate to build pipelines to carry ethanol from the Midwest to the East Coast? And what do you think of the idea?
Well, we had heard of a couple of firms going to be putting some money together in some research and testing here about a couple weeks ago, and it was going to run from, I think, if I remember right, it was like Iowa to the East Coast. And, of course, what the problem always has been, it seems like, whenever they've done any of this testing, is that it can take on water. So it'll be interesting in the pipes it can take on condensation. So it'll be interesting to see how well this works, and my guess is eventually they'll get something that will work and they'll be able to move it to other parts of the country.
And how's the health of the ethanol industry at this point? Valero says it's going to run full bore one way or the other. I assume that's because they need the ethanol to blend.
Well, yeah, and it's kind of interesting. I mean, obviously for producers, of course, we don't like the corn price to go down, but for the users of it, like the ethanol plants, that's a good thing. Corn back up around $4 a bushel probably leaves them all both in the center. Farmers would rather have it higher, and ethanol buyers would rather have it lower.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the
day? That's all for now.
Thanks much, Harry. Harry Cooney is with GrowMark. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report, usually once a month on the first Monday, or rather first Tuesday of each and every month. Back in just a couple minutes when we'll talk with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson in Morris at 815-941-3758. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
It's World Health Day and National Coffee Cake Day. The history of the coffee cake dates back to the ancient Egyptians. Precursors of modern cakes were first baked in Europe sometime in the mid-17th century. On this day in agricultural history in 1727, Michael Addison was born. Edison was a French biologist who developed a system of plant classification based on physical characteristics. In 1860, Will Keith Kellogg was born. He founded the Battle Creek Toasted Corn Flake Company to manufacture cereals developed by his brother, John Harvey Kellogg. In 1869, David Fairchild was born. He supervised the introduction of over 20,000 exotic plants and varieties of established crops into the U.S., including alfalfa and soya beans. He managed the Foreign Seed and Introduction Program of USDA for more than two decades, and he was author of The World Was My Garden and Exploring for Plants. In 1884, E.H. Sutton, an African-American inventor from North Carolina, patented a cotton cultivator. And in 1948, the World Health Organization was established. The WHO has more than 190 member nations. Its mission is the attainment by all peoples of the highest possible level of health, with an emphasis on infectious diseases. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Oh, sunshine finally here in the Midwest. Thank you very much, but it's still cold.
Yeah, it is still cold, and it really is going to be a pattern that I think is going to test a lot of people's patience, not only here across the Midwest, but most of the nation is. We have a lot of cold air still left up in the northern latitudes. The Pacific Ocean just keeps forming storms. And there's really no sign yet of an area of high pressure establishing itself over the southern plains or the Gulf and expanding northward. And that is what we start to look for this time of year. Down in the lower latitudes, some high pressure building and wanting to push north, trying to get us into that late spring, early summer season. But we're not going to have any of that. We're going to stay in a very active pattern all across the lower 48.
Oh, dang that Pacific Ocean in California. Let's just get rid of them both. Okay, so we can't get rid of both of them, and they do impact our weather. I want to know just a bit more about the cold weather that we've had. How much of an impact do you think that it's had on the winter wheat crop across the Great Plains states?
Well, it looks like they may have benefited from two things with the cold weather. One is many areas of winter wheat country finally have gotten some precipitation with this more active weather pattern. And certainly while temperatures were cold, the moisture that finally came in may have helped out from having the freezing temperatures maybe not do as much damage if it was dry. So there's been a little bit of good news in winter wheat country, although the stress that has been obtained from the dry winter up until recently and that cold weather certainly did some damage.
And back here to the Midwest, if you can give us an outlook for a week or 10 days, how much wet weather is there? Is there dry weather behind that? Are conditions going to get to the point where there will be some evaporation that happens?
Well, there's going to be a little bit of that, as there will be some spacing between these systems, sort of like we have now, where we are going to have a couple of days, maybe 3 days of warmer and drier weather. But the next series of storms that will traverse the country are going to take their time. And so once we get into a wet pattern, it could be 2 or 3 days of cloudy, cool, and wet, which is going to make it hard for those warmer, drier days to really gain much ground. If there's any good news is that at least in the next 5 to 7 days, the heavier precipitation may stay out of the Red River area. Those areas where they don't want any more flooding may escape some of the heavier precipitation. But it does look like the wet weather in the Midwest is coming. That also does mean getting back to winter wheat country, they are going to be picking up more rains in Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas.
Well, I was going to go to China, but let's stay with wheat for just a moment. They'll be sowing in Australia their winter wheat crop pretty shortly. What kind of conditions will they be putting wheat into the ground?
Well, in some areas, they're actually going to have some chances of being able to put some wheat in the ground with a little bit of moisture. This will be especially true in the central, east central, and far eastern areas of Australia, some areas of the south central as well. Precipitation is on the increase in Australia, so there's a little bit of hope for some better soil moisture, and boy, they need it.
And 10 seconds on the start of the growing season in China.
Well, they have experienced a little bit of what we've been experiencing here in the lower 48, and that is some pretty active weather, and that's how it's going to go there as well. Sometimes we see this, especially in the winter and the spring. Sometimes our weather patterns in China and the United States are not all that different, and that's exactly what they're seeing.
Don, thanks much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.